Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have a fun-loving author with me. I just know it. She is Mary Martinez. Mary lives in Magna, a little town west of Salt Lake City, Utah. Together with her husband, she has 6 grown children and 6 wonderful grandsons and 5 beautiful granddaughters. She loves to spend time with family and friends, and she includes good books as friends. Mary writes mostly romantic suspense, romance, women's fiction, and she has just begun to dabble in young adult mystery. During her writing career, she has been a conference coordinator, workshop presenter, and a chapter president for the Utah chapter of Romance Writers of America. In 2007, she was presented with the Utah Romance Writers of America Service Award in acknowledgement and appreciation for outstanding service. Mary and her husband love to travel, especially to the Caribbean for relaxing, and Italy for the wine. And most recently, she discovered she was Irish and Scottish. And of course, they had to visit Ireland and Scotland. Mary fell in love with both, but the green hills of Ireland felt like home. With the experience from the exotic places she has visited, she is able to fill her books with colorful descriptions of cities, painting a colorful backdrop for her characters. They are avid concert hoes. And yes, they pretty much want to do it, all of them. They love outdoor amphitheaters and best, and attend as many during the warmer months as possible. Mary and her husband are also enthusiastic college football fans. They have season tickets to the Utes, University of Utah football, and they tailgate every game. In fact, they love tailgating so much, they were married at a tailgating in 1999. And I'll say, go Utes, right? Anyone who has a headshot showing them wearing my favorite color turquoise while holding a glass of wine is always welcome here. So welcome to the show, Mary.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you. And I don't know where to start. Perhaps we're going to start with the wine. What kind of wine is in your glass right now?
It's actually a Chenin Blanc.
Ah, okay. Is that your favorite?
No. Wine in general is my favorite. And it can't be boxed. I'm a snob.
Oh, you don't squeeze your wine, do you?
No.
Well, I have an Amarone right now from the Valpolicella region. Somebody just gave us a bottle as a gift, and it's a 2005. It's awesome.
That does sound good.
It does.
We just visited Calistoga Wine Country just in May.
Mm.
Love that place.
Yeah. So what is it about wine you love so much?
I don't know, because I didn't grow up drinking wine. I don't like beer, and so all my friends would drink beer, and I just kind of started drinking a little wine here and there. And then, of course, my sister-in-law lives in Calistoga, and so we visited there, and I just went wine tasting, and that was the end of that. I just loved it.
No, I get that. All right, so we're going to get into your writing in a moment, but is writing your full-time job?
I wish. No, unfortunately, it doesn't pay the bills, so I actually work for the state of Utah.
Yeah? What do you do there?
I am in the appeals department for the Department of Workforce Services.
Oh, okay. All right. So that is your day job, and writing is your passion.
Exactly.
Well, now, you write women's fiction, romance, and romantic suspense. I mean, so many different genres, but you seem to make it so simple to be versatile. How did that come about, that you can go from genre to genre with ease?
Well, that's kind of hard because I didn't mean to. I've always loved suspense, and so that's what it started out to be. But then every once in a while, there's a character, like in My Four Sisters, and that's my women's fiction, that one of them, that just called to me, and it was not a romance or it wasn't suspense. It was just relationships, and it just, I had to write it. I don't know how people like it or anything. It was more a personal, I had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Something from inside that said, you've got to get this out. Well, we're going to talk about your Beckett series, but before we do, are there any other previous books that you would like to talk about today?
Before my Beckett series, let's see. One of my, which will always be close to my heart, which is Watching Jenny, because that was my first real book that was taken by a publisher, and so I just love it. And plus, it's music. I love music, and she's in a rock band, and she's called Blade, and she has a stalker, and so, of course, it was suspense, and that's just, like, going to be one of my favorites, I think, of all time.
It's either the first book that the person wrote or the one that they're currently working on.
Oh, yeah, always the one I'm currently working on right now. I'm working on the fifth of the Becketts, and so, of course, Matt and Bryn are my favorites at the moment.
I was going to ask about that Beckett series. That was a new genre for you, yes?
The Beckett series is mostly romantic suspense, but it's a family. It's every single book is one of the siblings, and the parents are in every single one of them, and they lovingly call them the elders.
Oh, okay, I like that. So you are now working on the fifth of that series.
Correct.
Okay. Well, maybe give us the titles and then a brief synopsis of each.
Okay. Well, let's see. The first one is Disappear, and it is about Tyler Beckett, and he is an FBI agent he's actually working undercover, and as luck would have it, he actually looks like their hitman, and the company he's working undercover, unknown to him, actually hired him because of his looks so that he could take the fall when and if the hitman got caught. And so, of course, Kara, who is his love interest, she witnesses a murder. And this hitman has never had any witnesses. No one knew who he was. And, of course, he has to go after her. And so they send Tyler in to take her to a safe house. And the minute she opens the door, she thinks it's a hitman. And it goes downhill for a while from there, but, of course, ends up with him saving her in the end.
Okay.
And that's the first one. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is Innocent, and that is his sister, Jessica, and she is far from police anything. She is a school teacher, a math school teacher, and she has had a crush on Tyler's, she called him Ty, but his partner, Gabe, ever since she met him, but of course Gabe will have nothing to do with her. But what happens is she's falsely accused of sexually assaulting some of her students. And what happened is her students are football jocks, and she actually has the audacity to fail them when they don't do their homework. And so Coach Brindley decides to frame her to get her out of the way so that his star players can still play and get into prestigious colleges, which would help his career out. And, of course, Gabe has to be the one to save her in the end. And that's the second book. And then the third book is another of the Beckett sisters, and it is called Quiet. And she is an attorney for a Manhattan law firm. And so she starts investigating a murder. And meanwhile, in the townhouse next to her, she starts hearing these noises during the night, and she starts thinking that maybe something's going on over there. And then, of course, the case that she is investigating and trying to take to court, she starts getting notes, threatening notes. And so a detective has to come and stay with her. And, of course, that doesn't go well at first either, but they find out what's going on next door has nothing to do with the notes, and so it's kind of convoluted until the end when, of course, David saves her in the end. You know, romantic suspense. And then the fourth one that I've got out is Illusion, and it's another Beckett's sister, and it's one of the twins, and her name is Reagan, and she is a special agent, and she actually covers finance, and it's domestic terrorism that are going after our financial institutions. They're actually going out after an institution called World Banking Association, and there's five entities. And so she meets Special Agent Paco Perez, and they are going after these people that are, and so they're dressed as, you know, computer geeks, finance, and go to a summit, and they're going after the bad guys. And, of course, Gabe and Tyler are both in this book with them because they're helping with the investigation. And this actually continues. I mean, it's the end. The the bad guy, there's a hitman in there, and he's called the headman. And he actually will take the head of one victim, put it in a bag, and then put it on the next victim. And there's three of the top heads of those entities that are killed before they catch the headman. And there's a little bit of a twist with that. And then it actually goes on because her older brother, Matt, works for one of the institutions, as does Bryn. And Bryn is one of the targets. And so their book, Prophet, that I'm writing right now, actually continues the search to find out who the people are that are trying to take the World Banking Association down. And then the sixth book will be Abandoned, and that is our other twin. Oh, let's see. I did tell you about Prophet a little bit, I think. And then Abandoned, of course, is the second twin, which is, her name is Glenna. And she lives completely on the other side of the country. She lives in Napa in one country, and she owns a specialized antique shop, and she falls for someone that is one of her dealers, and he isn't what he seems. He's actually after something that she's purchased unknowingly that has something inside of it. And so when he disappears on their wedding day and nobody can find it, she thinks foul play has happened to him and that he needs help when he just took off with the goods. And so one of her brother's friend, Patrick, takes over, and he's an agent in the California, and will start helping her find what's going on, and together they uncover. And that's the sixth one. And so I'm still trying to plot out what's going on, so I can't really tell you much more because that's about as far as I've gone.
We don't want any spoilers either. So you've got some varied and some heavy topics going on, like the headman. What was it like to get into those kind of subjects?
Well, it was kind of fun. I had to do a lot of research because there was no blood spatter, because if you have blood spatter, that helps the investigation. And so I had to really go into what wouldn't cause blood spatter. And so I've gone into, I have a friend who does a lot of martial arts, and she really helped me. She writes also the romantic suspense. So she helped me with my research. And there's, and I cannot remember the name of it right now because I'm on the spot, but it's a certain kind of sword that you can just go straight through, and there's no blood spatter at all, and the body just goes down. Of course, it takes a lot of upper body strength and a lot of practicing. So, of course, he's pretty much a nutcase and practice a lot on, you know, after he's caught, they start finding other people who he actually practiced on that wasn't quite so pretty.
Oh, my. Where did these ideas come from, Mary?
I have no idea. They just come to me. And I a lot of times I'll be just thinking, well, what can I do that's not the same? And I honestly have no idea where the headman came from. It actually wasn't going to be one of the Becketts. It was going to be a standalone thriller. And I don't know, it just kind of evolved into Reagan's story. And, of course, there's a lot more twists and turns than what I've given you because I don't want to give anything away. But he is captured, and he's at the moment, he's still behind bars in Prophet, but you just don't know if they're going to let him out because of the twist that at the very end of Illusions. Sorry.
I just took a note, as you were saying, the title names, all of your titles are one word. Is that correct?
It is. I did that on purpose. At first, the first one was actually going to be called The Bridge because of it actually takes you from Manhattan. Most of them are based in Manhattan. Prophet is based in more in D.C., and then Abandoned is in San Francisco, but most of them, you know, they came from Brooklyn. That's where the elders live, is in Brooklyn, and they mostly work in Manhattan. But the first one, Disappear, she goes to looking for the hitman that she thinks that Tyler gets killed. And so she's looking for him, and she has to disappear in order to find the killer. And so she goes to San Francisco. And I'm not going to tell you how she does it, but it was called The Bridge because of San Francisco Bridge. And so then it just kind of because of all the bridges in New York and everywhere that the stories are based, there's bridges. And so every single one of my books have a bridge on them. And so that kind of ties them all together.
Okay, got it. Now, these books...
I'm not sure what that has to do with one title, but that's just kind of how I went about things.
Oh, my gosh. Now, the books, are they standalone or can they be read? Do they have to be read as a series?
They don't have to be read in order. They are standalone. Even Illusion and Prophet can be mixed up, but it's more interesting as far as if you want to follow the relationships and the family growth, it's better to do it in order. But if you just picked up one out of the series, that would be fine because each story has a beginning, middle, and end.
Okay.
So it doesn't leave you hanging for the next one. Even Illusion, whose story with the bad guys kind of go into Prophet, has an ending. And it doesn't really matter. You can kind of read both of those either way you want to, but it would be better to read Illusion first. But actually, all of them are standalone.
Okay, all right. But if folks have a choice, it would probably make the most sense to start at the beginning, as you say, just to follow that family through the whole series.
Right, because it is family relationship-based.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, your characters, share some of the more memorable ones with us, the ones that you feel that are your favorites.
Well, the characters of the Becketts feel mostly like family to me because we have a son that lives in Brooklyn, so we go there quite often. And so I've actually walked their streets. I know where they live. I know where they play. I know where they shop. I know I've even done a little video that's on my YouTube that of me in Bryant Park where during the winter where they were ice skating, where a couple of the characters went ice skating and where they shop. And so I feel like they're actually, like I know them. And they're like real people to me, which is kind of scary. But but if they are. They're just like my family. And so the Becketts, I think it's because I've been writing them for so long and because I go out and I take pictures and then I come home and in my mind I get into that scene and I can actually visualize it. Other books I really like, too, because I still bond with all my characters. They're all people to me. They're actual breathing people to me. Classic Murder, Mr. Romance. It's a fun murder mystery, and it was actually the one I liked the best as far as research, and that's because it's based after Cary Grant movies, and like... South by South, what is it, North by Northwest?
Yes.
I think that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And then the one where he's an affair to remember. Mm-hmm. And then they just got all these different ones that he was in. And so I actually sat in front of my TV with a notebook, taking notes through the whole thing for like days before I started even writing the first scene. And I kind of, okay, so... this copycat murder can be for this one and this one and this one. I kind of outlined it. I am writing by the seat of my pants normally. This one I kind of had a little bit of structure, but most of the time I have a blurb and I kind of know the first, the middle, and the end. I know where I'm starting and where I'm trying to go. I don't always get there the way I think I'm going to, and I don't always end the way I think I'm going to, but that one was a little bit more structured than I've ever been.
Interesting. Interesting how it just kind of takes you, whether you want to go or not, you've got to follow the characters and follow what's happening, huh?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've mentioned research a couple times. I spoke with an author just the other day and said something that I thought was very important, talking about research, because I know this happens to me as I'm researching for my radio shows. Often I get so caught up in the research that I land someplace different, and then it's hard for me to get back to what I'm supposed to be focusing on. So when you research, do you find that, or do you just get to what you need to look up and move off and then get back to the writing?
Oh, I have to be very careful with research because I can get lost for days in research. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I'll be following one lead, oh, that looks interesting. And before I know it, I'm like not even researching the topic I started with. So I really have to be careful with that, but I love research because I could be a professional student if I could afford to live and actually go to school 24/7. I would love it, and I would write, and I would everything I learned would just I would just love it, but I can't. So I have to be very careful. The Cary Grant one was easy because I had a list of his shows, and so I didn't really get carried away because I watched it. It was, you know, starting, then it was done. Right. And then I went on to the next one. But when I'm on the computer, I can really get lost. Yeah. And I like when an author has to have a balance because I've read some that you can tell they've really, 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 really researched it and they really want you to know. And so a lot of times you're buried in all that knowledge that the author has found. And so I hope I'm not one of those. I hope I have the facts right and that my research has paid off. But I stick to the story and I don't tell the reader something, you know, that they don't need to know, you know. I need to have the background, but they don't need to know the whole history of that town or the forefathers or whatever.
I think you hit upon something extremely important, and no one else that I've talked to has ever said that. And I've read books where, yes, you feel like, okay, this author knows what he's talking about and now wants me to know that he knows, but I don't need to know all of that. And I also find myself doing that myself when I'm preparing for a radio show. There's just so much I want to share, and then you look back and you think, that really is not an important piece, and you've got to edit yourself and you've got to edit your research. So I think I think we touched upon something extremely important there. And I want to talk a little about your writing process. You said that most of the time you kind of go by the seat of your pants, that one book was outlined. Do you have a favorite place that you consistently write?
Most of the time I'm in my office because once the kids moved out and I actually had a room, I made an office. I have a great big L-shaped desk and I love it. That's where I write, and I have to have Pandora blasting. So that works for me. A lot of my best work, since I do work full-time, so by the time I get home from work, I'll edit or do promotion or something because I'm too brain dead to write. But I have to really schedule it with my big family. So my critique partner and I, at least once every other month, do a full day at Barnes & Noble. And we'll get there at 9 and be there till 5, and we just write all day. And then once or twice a year, we do a weekend writing retreat, and I write almost 24/7 while I'm there.
Interesting. So noise and sound and being at Barnes & Noble's and having all the disruption doesn't bother your concentration?
Oh, I have my headset on with Pandora blaring.
Okay. All right. Any favorite munchies or drinks, or do we think that there's wine involved with the writing?
Wine and if I'm at Barnes & Noble, it's lattes. So I'm big coffee. I'm a big snob for coffee and a big snob for wine. And food, I just love food in general is my problem.
Oh, so you just have a grand old time with your Pandora music and your coffee and your wine and your writing. You are in your happy place, right?
Mm-hmm. And so is cooking. I actually have a cooking blog and a virtual cookbook that I'm doing.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. So you have a cooking
cooking
blog, huh?
It's called the After Work Cook. I get really stressed at work. And so I'll come home and I've been known to cook and prepare the meal for 2 hours. And so we eat it like 7:30, 8 o'clock, and it's over and done in 10, 15 minutes, but it really, really calms me, especially if I'm angry at someone at work. Mm-hmm. All that chopping and dicing really calms me down.
She's dangerous with the knife, folks. Good thing you're at home,
yep.
Right?
Yes.
I could just see you doing that. That's so funny. Oh, my gosh. Well, now, before you mentioned that sometimes you go home and you have to decompress by doing some PR work, what are your best marketing resources that you might be able to share with other authors who might be listening?
You know, I wish I knew because I have tried everything and nothing changes as far as the biggest thing that I've noticed is if I go away, if I get really, really busy, that's a bad thing. As long as I can keep a presence up, there are so many social medias out there, and I just don't have the time to do them all. So I've got a presence in a couple of them that I never, ever, ever hardly go to, which is probably bad. But I try to stay with Twitter. Facebook, Instagram, and Google+. I do not like LinkedIn. Every time I look at it, it sends something out to my, all my friends, even myself at my work address, saying, Mary would like to connect with you. I'm like, no, I didn't say that. So I really don't like LinkedIn, but other people love it. But I try and keep right to those social medias. I try and blog on my Mary's Garden blog at least once a week. I usually post something new every Monday. My after work blog, I probably do that. I'm trying to get some guests so I don't have to do it so much, because I've been doing it about one time a month, because I actually do a video with me making, and I'm total geek. Mm-hmm. I miss my words and it's like, whatever, you know, I'm just a total geek, but my husband will start filming it. So I've got an apron with my cover for the after work cook. And then the rest of it, I just do myself, and as I'm doing it, you know, chopping and showing what I did. And then I post the actual recipe on my blog. I started a cookbook and it was just, I hated formatting. And I just finally said, okay, I'm just doing a virtual one. Mm-hmm. And maybe someday I'll copy and paste from my blog all the recipes and do a book.
Okay. Wow.
Did I even answer your question there?
Yes, you did. And as you say, there's so many social media outlets. You've got to kind of rein it in and concentrate on a few. And I don't know how one can be a writer and an editor, and a lot of folks self-publish and then be promoting at the same time. You almost need to be four or five different people to get this mm-hmm. job done anymore. It's huge.
It is. And a lot of people do. A lot of people have, I don't know if they call them posses or groups or whatever, and they actually help. And I just don't have the time to find them, the people to be, you know, in your author's group or something. I don't know if there's an actual name for it, that they have you, their team. I think it's their writing team, and they actually help promote. And I wish I knew how they did it, but if I didn't work full-time, and plus I do transit, public transit, because I can't stand to have a car sit there all day while my husband needs one, so I don't want to buy one. So I do public transit, and that's when I actually read just for me.
Okay.
Because you have to read to keep up with everything. And I joined a book club, and that's the best thing I ever did, because they're all readers, none of them are writers, and I learn more from them about what they want to read and what they want to hear and what they hate mm-hmm. than anything I've ever done. So it's an hour each way. And so with working full time, I don't know how people find people to help them, mm-hmm. let alone how they afford it. So I just do my own thing. I find free things. I wanted to invest in, you know, a couple of ads and things like that and see if they help. I'm always experimenting, but mostly I just find that the best I do for me is just to be present mm-hmm. and try not to say, buy my book every, you know, I try and, like today on my author page, I kind of tried that go live while we were golfing this morning, and I totally looked like a geek, but we'll see how it goes.
At least it's real. You know, it's honest
yeah,
and it's real.
Exactly, because we're doing a panel tomorrow night at the library, and I'll have my three grandsons that wrote the young adult with me. Mm-hmm. And so I was practicing for that, so I knew how to work the go live. So we're going to do that, and I'm going to interview all the authors and have it live on my Facebook page.
You are one awesome lady, just filling every minute with something productive. Even Mary's Garden, do you have a garden?
My husband does.
Okay.
I love Mary's Garden. All the pictures on my website we took. Right now I have a summer one, and the house in the background was actually taken in Ireland, but I changed my scenes with the seasons. And my husband has taken all the pictures, my logo with the butterfly and the red flower. He actually took that. And we took them at Red Butte Gardens. It's here in Utah. Mm-hmm. And he takes all kinds of pictures of, he loves doing all the floral and things like that. I'm trying to get him into a stock photo thing, and he's just not very computer literate. He can take the pictures, and I don't have time to download them, so I've got to teach him. And that's my garden, and he has a garden. If you give me anything to garden, it would be dead in 2 seconds.
Well, on your website, though, it says Mary's Garden, where imagination blooms. So maybe the actual plant might die, but imagination would bloom, right?
That's the only thing that grows in my garden or blooms is imagination, well, because I can't grow anything. My kids tease each other. They say, never give mom plants because they will die a slow, painful, thirsty death. Because I forget to water them.
Oh, my gosh. You don't have time doing all these other things. You are awesome, Mary. Well, now, is there anything else you would like to talk about today that we didn't get to?
Well, just my young adult one. I don't know if I'll ever do another one because it started out when I was home. I had stayed home to write once until my husband got laid off, and then I'm back to work. But anyway, so I watched the grandkids a lot, and I tried to write. Well, the three oldest, they're 17, 15, and 14 now, but it was like 5 years ago. So they were younger, and we decided to do a mystery. And so we went walking around our small little town called Magna, and we took photos and everything, and we did a walkabout. We took a picture of the, you know, the pizza parlor, the library, the park. Then we came home and built us a fictional town on the clifftop of, in California, along the coast. We called it Cliffdale. And it's a little teeny town for special people, like kids who have special, like, superpowers. And so they helped me plot it out, and they solve a 50-year-old mystery of a bank robbery from New York, and he went there to hide, and then he disappeared, and they solved the mystery. And so they helped me plot it out, the one and only time I plotted something out completely every, and then they went off and played and let me write it, but we go to, you know, the library panels, and they talk about it and how we actually plotted it, but I wrote it. So that's about the only thing we had left.
How beautiful is that, to share your passion with your grandchildren, make them a part of that? I love that story. I love that.
The only problem is now all the other kids want to do it also, but it took me 5 years to do that because they just wouldn't help me because they got it all plotted, and it's like, I don't know. So I said, okay, I'm writing it. So I finally did, just to do it. And so I said, the other kids, if they want to write a book, then they can write it, and I'll help them as far as editing and things like that. For the little ones, we might do a picture book for like a baby book or something, you know, for like a children's, for like a 3 or 4 year old. We might do that.
Wow. Beautiful family and beautiful time together. And you as the grandmother really are going to leave a legacy behind for them. Well, now, how can listeners get in touch with you, and how can they purchase your books?
You can get a hold of me at my email address, which is Mary L. Martinez and the number 3@gmail.com. My website is marymartinez.com. And you can get to both my blogs. You can get to all my social media. I'm on Twitter, Pinterest. Pinterest is dangerous to me. I can't get there for 5 hours in a row, you know. Mm-hmm. I play on Pinterest. And then Google+, I have a YouTube, LinkedIn, and Facebook. I have other things like Goodreads. I'm a Goodreads author, and Network, or it's called Literary Network. And so I'm a lot of different places, but everywhere you can find me from my face or my website. The website, you can find me everywhere.
MaryMartinez.com. What a pleasure to meet you and share a glass of wine with you and share this conversation. I encourage everyone to get over to your website, marymartinez.com, Mary's Garden, where imagination blooms, the beautiful pictures on your site. You're a lovely lady. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us and your books today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I've enjoyed it too.